Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We're here to empower, to heal, to live a longer life. And today, we're going to begin by looking at a university in Japan, where they say a greater maternal consumption of vegetables, fruit, vitamin C during pregnancy is associated with a lower risk of childhood and behavioral problems. Considering that the United States is number one in the developed world in infants dying up to age one, and yet we have the most expensive obstetric and gynecological system in the world. We charge more than any other nation by double or treble for delivering a pregnancy. So how is it that so many of these infants are dying? We'll explore that. We have about 15 other pieces of information we'll share, all from peer-reviewed literature. And then today is a talkback day. We're going to take your calls. We're going to have a little segment here, 4 minutes, where U.S. Senator Blumenthal raises concerns on 5G wireless technology at a Senate hearing. Why wasn't anything done about this? Why didn't the media cover it at all? Neocons, the manufacturer of the Iran crisis with Garth Porter. Most schooling is training for stupidity and conformity. Who said that? Professor Noam Chomsky. It's short when he talks about how stupid graduates are and how they conform. It's only a minute, 22 seconds, but very powerful. And an ex-pharma executive gives explosive speech on vaccines before the CDC's advisory committee. Now, you'll be able to call in after each of the segments that I share with you today and share your point of view on TalkBack. Our TalkBack number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. We're also going to go to your archive voicemails, our voicemail line that you can call at any time, 24/7. Leave an opinion, a statement, or a question. 862-800-6805. 862-800-6805. We begin with this reporting from IMI Japan. What they did is they did a study of looking at all the things that allow a person to have a healthy pregnancy. And they found that antioxidants and vegetables and fruits would make a big difference if you had a lot of those in children up to the age of five. And they studied 1,199 mothers. And so as a result, that's what they found. If the mothers paid attention to their diet, and they had a lot of fermented foods, which they do in the Orient. We don't so much here. But lots of fruits and vegetables, including root vegetables that we don't eat here. Like you never hear anyone eating rutabaga and parsnips. Some people do, but the average person doesn't. Kohlrabi. You can see it in the supermarket. Generally, people don't know what it is. So they don't use it. Horseradish. Getting it? It looks like an elephant's head. A long trunk look and then looks like ears on the side. Now you peel that and shred it and add some apple cider vinegar and mustard and let it sit overnight. Whoa, does that decongest you? It is terrific. It's also good to spice things up. So that's what they found. More vitamin C during pregnancy was independently inversely associated with childhood conduct and hyperactivity and low pro-social social behavior, meaning the more vitamin C that the mother had and then the child had, the better their behavior. So that's good. From Penn State University comes a new study. Walnuts are good for your gut, but also promote a healthier heart. Now, I think walnuts and walnut butter are one of the best things you can take. Just throw it into a smoothie or eat them just straight. This was a randomized controlled trial where the researchers found that eating walnuts every day as part of a healthy diet was associated with increases in certain bacteria that can help promote health. and those gut bacteria were associated with an improvement in heart condition and therefore lessening heart disease risks. This was published in the Journal of Nutrition. A handful of walnuts, or 1 tablespoon of walnut butter, which is just walnuts that are pulverized into a butter. From the University of California at Riverside comes a study about America's most widely consumed oil causes genetic changes in the brain. That's correct. Soybean oil not only can lead to obesity and diabetes, but also could affect neurological conditions like autism and Alzheimer's, anxiety and depression. So where do you get this soybean? Well, it's simple. It's almost always in your fast food, frying, French fries, fried chicken. That's where you're getting it. It's added to packaged foods. It's fed to livestock. It's by far the most widely produced and consumed edible oil in the United States. That's according to the Department of Agriculture. But it's not healthy. And this was published in the Journal of Endocrinology. The oils that are healthy, well, coconut oil, olive oil, flaxseed oil, hemp oil, those are healthy. And this is not just one study. They reviewed multiple studies to show that it adversely affects the hypothalamus, where a number of critical processes take place. By the way, the hypothalamus regulates your body weight via the metabolism and maintains your body temperature, which is critical for reproduction and physical health, as well as response to stress. So just stay away from soybean oil. University of Vermont study finds an association between eating hot peppers and decreased death. How about that? Now, there's not a lot of eating hot peppers in restaurants in the north, northeast. You go south, you go southeast and southwest, you go down around Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, Arkansas, Georgia, oh yeah. They love crayfish, spiced. They love everything spiced down there, down in New Orleans. And if you've never been to Mardi Gras, go. It's wonderful. I've been to about 15 Mardi Gras. The food is spectacular and healthy. The music is just diverse. And there's one of the few places in America where you can hear the old bluegrass and the old jazz. And you can walk down a street like on Bourbon Street, and in one block you could have 4 different nightclubs or places where people just go in because each one has their own music. And people are just a lot of fun, just upbeat, positive. So it's a place to see, but the food, good for you. And as long as you stay away from the pork and some of the fried food. And I remember there was a chef named Paul. I'd seen him on television. I'd never seen him in person. But as I'm walking down this quiet street, a one-off Bourbon Street, as I walked by, I did a double take because there he was in this little tiny, and I mean tiny, restaurant. And back at the back was a little tiny kitchen. There he's sitting on a stool. He was gigantic. He had to have gone 400 plus pounds. And but people, just like the people, like, oh, who was it? One of the greats down there. Fats Domino. You walk around the French Quarter, you see these people. And then, no big deal. They're just their local people. People wait in line to get one of those dishes. But hot peppers are good. I had a friend that owned Madras Woodlands, which was probably New York City's best-known Indian restaurant over on the east side. I took some friends over there to eat one night, and there were 2 brothers, they're both medical doctors, and came over, and he would always give the suggestion, here's what you should have, and they give you different curries and peas, and knowing I'm a vegan, and my friends, but they were always spicy. And I said, now, fellas, this is spicy. And they were eating it and drinking water. And yeah, this is hot. And the guy came over and said, this isn't hot. This is not hot. In India, no. This would be considered very, very mild. He said, this is hot. And with that, he brought over a little tiny pepper. And he took a knife and he cut it like that fella in the Goodfellas in prison was cutting garlic, you know, very thin, little tiny piece. And he handed it to each one of us. And, oh, that was a pan of pepper. Whoa. I mean, just touching the tongue. And he eats the whole darn thing. Just eats it down, no sweating, no eyes popping out of his head, no heart attack. Well, spicy food is good for you. And here's the study in PLOS One, major scientific journal. Now, you got to go back centuries. Peppers and spices have been thought to be beneficial in the treatment of disease. But only one other study conducted in China and published in 2015 has previously examined chili pepper consumption with its association with death. And this new study corroborates the earlier study's findings. Using National Health and Nutritional Examination data collected from 16,000 Americans who were followed for 23 years, medical scientists and professors of medicine examined the baseline characteristics of the participants according to the hot chili pepper consumption, and they found the consumers of hot chili red peppers tended to be young, male, white, Mexican-American, married, and drank alcohol, smoked cigarettes, consumed vegetables and meats. And in comparison to participants who did not consume red chili peppers, they examined data from a median follow-up of 18.9 years and observed the number of deaths and then analyzed scientific cause of death. And they found that those who ate the most chili peppers lived the longest life, almost irrespective of everything else they did. That was rather interesting. So if nothing else, try gradually, slowly increase the heat. And most chefs are very aware they don't use very hot peppers, unless it's known to be a hot pepper place, in which case then gently go up in the scale. Internet use reduces study skills in university students from Swansea University and University of Milan. Quite simply, it shows that research has shown that students who use digital technology excessively, which is most, are less motivated to engage with their studies and are more anxious about tests. You know, it's that simple. From University of Pavia, which is in Italy, published in Drug Design, Development, and Therapy, coenzyme Q10 improved statin tolerability in a randomized trial. Now, I'm opposed to statins. I've studied, I've written on the topic, and I find that they are not the miracle drug, and they destroy coenzyme Q10 and unique coenzyme Q10 because of the production of adenosine triphosphate, or ATP, meaning the actual energy in your cell. As we age, we have less mitochondria, we have less energy, and that's why people fatigue and are tired more. All the more reason that the older we get, the more exercise we should be doing. Now, again, when you do exercise, I don't care if you're 60 or 90, you start off at a baseline, and you should increase your endurance and your intensity of exercise about every 2 weeks. There's no rush to it. You take your time. I tell people always, never exercise to exhaustion. Never exercise if you're injured. And gradually allow your body to adapt. Burn internal fat. Lay down new muscle. Now, for some people, if you start to exercise vigorously and you get a blood test, it may show you have an elevated C-reactive protein or homocysteine. In and of itself, you shouldn't be concerned because you should take a break from exercising for 4 or 5 days, have your blood tested again, and with most people, come back down to normal unless you have some other reason why it's elevated. Because just intense exercise in and of itself will break down muscle tissue, and that is pro-inflammatory, and that causes an increase in C-reactive protein and homocysteine. That does not mean you're more at risk of a heart attack. This is just how the body deals with pro-inflammatory agents, and all exercise is pro-inflammatory. The key is when you exercise, compensate. There's where your Epsom salts bath or massage. There's where your magnesium and vitamin C and coenzyme Q10 come in with L-carnitine and help the cells rejuvenate and become anti-inflammatory. So coenzyme Q10, if you are taking statin drugs, it helps. Can usually help against arthritis. All right. Well, if any of you have been to Germany, and this is where the University of Nuremberg in Germany did a study, but it didn't originate, usually originate in Sweden, Switzerland, and then migrated to that whole Nordic area. But it's well known that healthy eating increasing the general sense of well-being. And researchers at Frederick Alexander University in Nuremberg have now discovered that a fiber-rich diet can have a very positive influence on chronic inflammatory joint diseases, leading to stronger bones. And intestinal bacteria are key to the effect that diet has on health. Healthy intestinal flora consists of a multitude of species of bacteria. Like the bacteria you get from eating miso is different than the bacteria you get from having sauerkraut, which is different than if you were to have some ferment of any kind, like red wine. They all have different complementary bacteria. All of those are good. And that internal or intestinal flora, which is really just intestinal bacteria, can either protect against illness or cause illness, depending upon their composition. If the bacteria coexist harmoniously, like on a plant-based diet, they can protect the intestinal wall and prevent it from letting pathogens pass through. In the latest article published in Nature Communications, researchers showed that it is not the intestinal bacteria themselves, but rather their metabolites that affect the immune system and therefore have a knock-on effect on autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis. Now, how intestinal bacteria and the immune system communicate is not fully, let's say, clear at this point, and scientists are still unsure about what may be done to have a positive effect on bacteria. Well, I can tell you, it's not, we do it all the time. Start by giving yourself about 10 billion probiotics per day over a period of a couple months and watch your gut change. Increase the amount of fiber up to about 40 to 50 grams a day of various types of fiber, fruit fiber, especially berries, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, cherries, terrific for you. Apple fiber from apple skins. Seed fiber, especially if it's been dehulled, like sesame seeds and chia seeds. Those very gently move through the intestine and with a gelatinous effect, clean the little folds to help rid the intestine of any putrefying bacteria. Stay away from sugar and alcohol, fried foods. Then you have healthier bacteria. From Columbia University School of Public Health comes a study about the mix of stress and air pollution can lead to cognitive difficulties in children, meaning that children with elevated exposure to early life stress in their home and elevated prenatal exposure to air pollution exhibited heightened symptoms of attention and thought problems. That's according to the latest study. This was published in the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry. One more reason, instead of moving to major metropolitan areas that are all polluted, New York City's right there with them, and Atlanta, that's really polluted, Los Angeles is deadly polluted, San Francisco is totally polluted, move to a place where you have better quality of life, not just a standard of living. And finally, one study that is out of Kaiser Permanente, it's a 30-year study and shows women who breastfeed for 6 months or more reduce substantially your risk of developing diabetes. This was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Internal Medicine. So you're helping your baby by breastfeeding. That's the best inoculation for its immune system you can get. Every time you kiss your baby, that's giving the baby an opportunity to be naturally immunized. How so? Because what the mother is doing, the mother is picking up bacteria from the baby's lips, from his saliva, And then inside of her body, she immediately begins to create antibodies. Those antibodies are then put into the breast cells. And then when she breastfeeds, that's a natural inoculation. That's the healthiest and safest way in the world to immunize your baby. That's the latest on health and healing. We are 20 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to hear from an ex-pharma executive giving explosive evidence to the CDC Advisory Committee. Now, I don't trust anything this institutionally racist and completely corrupt organization has to say about anything. Do not we already know not to trust the media. Do you really trust those fools on CNN and MSNBC and the network clowns? No, of course you don't, because you have a brain and you realize you're being played, used, manipulated. I just wish that every night when they come on to do their little, you know, their little foolish pseudo-intellectual discourses, these people would know if they're conjugating a verb, that they had a mask. Edward Bernay, the father of American propaganda. It was his propaganda that helped motivate Joseph Goebbels and his propagandizing for the Nazis. And so we realize, oh, we're going to be propagandized. Let's get around the television now, everyone. Just, you know, zone in on these people. They don't care about us. They just care about their paychecks. It's all about identity politics, and, yeah, it's just stupid. So I do not trust anything the FDA or CDC has to say because they are utterly corrupt. And we have published articles on it. I've done documentaries on it. We've done broadcasts on it. These people are just should not be in a position of power. But here's a woman. Now, nothing's going to be done because what she had to say, but at least she got up and said it. You'll hear her when we come back from our break.
You broke my heart, 'cause I couldn't dance. You didn't even want me around. And now I'm back to let you know I can really shake 'em down.
I used to work for Merck, and now I speak out against the dangers that the pharmaceutical companies don't tell you about pharmaceutical drugs and vaccines. So when I was trained at Merck, which was a very intense training, we were told that all drugs go through a gold standard process, which is a double-blind, placebo-based, long-term studies. Well, for vaccines, as most of you know in here, they don't have to go through that process because they're categorized differently. So what's happening is we're seeing a lot of these vaccines being put onto the market, and our children are test subjects. And right now we're seeing almost half of all children with a chronic illness. And if you look at the studies, the independent studies that are not funded by the pharmaceutical companies that are filled this room, and you will see over 1,000 studies, more than 1,000 studies, showing the harm of the vaccines that are released onto the market without proper testing. So I ask that when you're considering the immunization schedules today, that you really take a step back, because our children and adults, you know, in the U.S. we've never been sicker. Our health is suffering. And I have done a lot of research on the difference between injection and ingestion. Now, this is something the pharmaceutical companies will never tell you. But anything injected goes straight into the circulation. It goes to vital organs. There's a great study on aluminum, which shows that 95%+ is absorbed in the body tissues. When you eat something, when you drink something, when you inhale something, 95% of that is filtered out through our body's natural detox processes. So anything you inject is going to be far, far more dangerous and far more potent. So what's happening now is because the pharmaceutical industry, it's a saturated drug market. and it's expensive. There's liability, which unfortunately there's no liability for vaccine makers with vaccines. So you're seeing all of these new vaccines in development, almost 300. Because if they can call it a vaccine, they can A, inject the body with toxins and make them far more potent and create further health issues that sell the drugs that make them, you know, the most powerful industry in the world. And we're seeing them without liability. So they go through the committee here. And I sat this morning and I was disturbed. And I've watched this on the television, you know, on the live stream before. But I was really disturbed. Doctors asking about safety signals and when safety information is going to be available. And the answer is always like, five sentences that distract with no real answers. Well, enough people have to be hurt by the vaccine before we'll know if it's safe. Enough people have to die from the vaccine before we'll know it's safe. It's not acceptable because the American population pays really good tax dollars to make sure that this committee is not biased and to make sure that this committee is putting the people of America before the profits of the pharmaceutical industry. And I saw it firsthand when I sold Vioxx for Merck, that these agencies, including the CDC and the FDA, are not doing their job anymore. And so I ask you today, when you consider these recommendations, consider all of the children and the adults and all the pregnant women that are going to suffer because of your vote. Because there may be a lot of money backing these recommendations from the pharmaceutical industry, but you are beholden to the American people. Please don't forget your mission.
Powerful statement, honest statement. However, the board doesn't care. They have to offer a short piece of information to the public, or at least a form where they can share information, but they don't do anything about it. They just go right ahead and produce vaccine schedules that have nothing to do with real science. We have a new article coming out on Monday that will virtually deconstruct every pro-vaccine argument that you can think of. We'll be posting it, I'll be broadcasting it, and share it. I already, this last Monday, did a program dealing with who's behind all these mandatory vaccines. And it's a group of people who profit from it in the pharmaceutical industry. So it has nothing to do with science. Now, here's a question for you. I'd like to hear your response. We're told that we should respect a woman's ability to take care of herself, her right to know what she's eating, what she does with her body, what kind of job she wants, and not discriminate against her having that opportunity or education. And indeed, major progress has been made. There's more college students, graduate students, and professionals now in college who are female than male. And their grades are better. And they're going out and getting jobs easier than most men. The statistics show that. Well, why is it when it comes to a person's health, we say you have no choice over your body? The government does. What is the right of the government? Where is it written that the government has a right to determine something that it is aligned with in a private-public partnership with a pharmaceutical company to insist and mandate with punishment if I don't obey that the government may allow or demand a product go into my body that I don't want? If I'm an educated person and if I've studied the issue and if I deem I do not want that, I should have a right to opt out, to recuse myself from that public process. Why do we have no such laws currently in place? And why is it in every state where they approach this, New York, New Jersey, California, and Maine, they approve it because they control your local legislative body? Your local legislators never invite people like myself or others like Tony Bark and Suzanne Humphreys and Dr. Nancy Banks and others in, including women doctors and women scientists. Is there misogyny? Is there bias? Is there sexism? Or is there just the idea that we've been told what this bill should be? It was written for us by a special interest group given to us in secret at enclaves. and we're honoring them. We have by thousands and thousands of bills we passed to the American Legislative Council and other groups representing big business. We honor where the money comes from, not the people. Why do we allow it? Why don't we insist that anyone who's met with Alex resigns from their state legislative position and ban them from ever again meeting and accepting bills from outside sources, then passing them in the secrecy with no transparency? And it's really someone else's bill. It's not your legislator's bills. These people are not the brightest people I've ever met. They're dim-witted. I don't think they know how to write a sentence in a bill. And yet they're proudly demanding, you must be vaccinated. Okay, why don't we say to the government, you have no right to my body, nor my mind? Why? Why don't we have that anywhere in America? They're individuals, but only after they've been victimized, not proactively before. Go to France. In fact, one in five countries today in the world, one in five is in crisis, and people are taking the streets. In France, they brought the whole country to a standstill with their yellow vest. Started off about pensions being reduced, and now it's spread to every sector of their society. They closed down the government, and Macron, the Donald Trump of France, had to pull back. He had all these austerity measures. In our own country, when someone's saying we want to cut back an entitlement like Social Security, well, Social Security has nothing to do with the government. The government didn't put one penny into your Social Security fund. It takes money out, $2.6 trillion, and puts an IOU in so they can wage these wars for their sponsors around the world. That's our money. We put it in from a lifetime of working and saving and giving it to a trust. So it'll be there when we retire and we need it. Are they that clueless? Are they that disconnected from the real world? They don't even know that Social Security is not an entitlement factor, nor for that matter Medicare by itself. I've just never met dumber people in my life than politicians. They are really out to lunch. Stupid. Stupid. I had dinner a couple times with Ted Kennedy. He was the prince of the Senate. Whoa. Have dinner in his home, one-on-one, just you and he, and see what you come away thinking, my God, this is the most powerful person in the Senate? Whoa. Yeah. Get behind the scenes and see who people are. You have a different impression. So that's the question for you. Why don't we ever protest, ever, anything? Why do we allow the government, dictatorial, despotic, fascistic, to demand that we give them our cash when we have made no crime? Nothing, we've done nothing, billions and billions of dollars through asset forfeiture, and nobody protests it. Why? Why do we take their vaccines? Why do we allow this to occur? And where do you think this is going? Have you ever set any standard where the government actually has to limit itself? It never limits. These bureaucracies keep growing, the military-industrial complex, the medical-industrial complex, the energy complexes, the food complex, they just keep growing like out of control, metastasizing cancers, and we just keep paying for it, but seem completely disconnected from it. Why? That's my question. I'll hold my views. I'm going to hear yours. In the interim, and I'm going to go to your calls right after this, I want you to hear what Professor Noam Chomsky has to say in a brief comment, a minute and 22 seconds. Quote, most schooling is training for stupidity and conformity.
Teacher?
History teacher.
What do you suggest in the high school? What do you suggest I do in that context to keep from perpetuating?
Well, you know, that's really important. I mean, you know, a lot of people, I suspect many of you, if you think of your own experience, I know me, you can remember cases where a teacher really made a terrific impression on you. I mean, most schooling is just training for stupidity and conformity. But every once in a while, and that's institutional too, there are reasons for that. But occasionally, you know, you get a spark. Somebody will challenge your mind, you know, make you think, encourage you to think, and so on. And that's a tremendous effect. You know, you just reach all sorts of people. Of course, if you do it, you're going to be, you may very well have problems. You have to tread a narrow line. There are plenty of people who don't want students to think. They're afraid of the crisis of democracy. You know, people start thinking and you get all these problems I was quoting at the beginning. You know, they won't have humility enough to submit to a civil rule, you know. Or they'll start trying to press their demands in the political arena, or they'll, you know, have ideas of their own instead of believing what they're told. And privilege and power typically doesn't want that, so they can react. And a high school teacher who tries to get students to think may find repression, firing, and so on.
What do you think of that? Is it your experience now? Most of you listening probably are middle-aged or over, though the average age of our audience is 37-year-old female listening at night with a college-educated background. What is your experience of education today versus when you were going to school? Where, when I was going to school, you could ask any question in class. You could be as critical a thinker, and they actually honored critical thinking. Today, if you're a teacher, it's dangerous. If you say something that someone, for whatever reason, feels threatens them, threatens their very existence as a person because you said something that they can't handle. What do you think of that? Where's this supposed to lead us? What's it going to do for the people who are graduating, thinking that they're perfect, privileged, and special, and then they meet the real world? Where their mom or dad, the helicopter parents or bulldozing parents, can't change the outcome of them getting a job or keeping a job. Your thoughts on that as well. 888-874-4888. Do you accept or reject what Noam Chomsky had to say? I'm interested in your opinions. Now, we're going to go to one more right now before we take... No, we're going to take a call right now, then we'll go to one more. I want you to hear the testimony. Listen very carefully to this because... virtually the entire communications industry, wireless industry, was represented at a Senate hearing. And they acknowledged there is no science they've done on health. None. Well, we have 20,000 studies showing it's dangerous. 26,000 scientists signed a letter to all the different world leaders. Don't allow 5G. And yet every commercial is how great 5G is going to connect us. You can talk to your, what day is it? What time of day? What's the temperature in Rio? You know, what was my favorite song when I was in high school? We have abrogated our responsibility for critical thinking or doing things for ourselves. For a service of electronic control over our lives. And yet this is showing that they had a hearing. Nothing was done from this hearing. Josh from New York City, you're on the air. Your turn, please.
Hi, good afternoon, Gary. I have listened to you for many years and as a consequence have done more than a modest amount of research on vaccines. And I have developed a skepticism about them because of the evaluations you've done regarding safety and efficacy. I think that arguments based on those criteria are valuable. I am not, however, of the belief that arguments based on someone's assertion of a right are useful or valid. I equate them to the notion that one doesn't have the right to yell fire in a crowded theater. And if I were of the belief that one was doing harm to others by not vaccinating one's child, I would find that a difficult argument to contest because I don't believe that people have a right to do what is harmful to others. And so when you make the argument one of someone's right not to have vaccines for their child, and one is confronted with the counter argument that you are endangering my child by doing that, I think that that is an argument that is unwinnable. And so I would prefer that the discussion be on the basis that you have presented more than most others regarding challenging the safety and efficacy, rather than making that on the basis of personal right.
I appreciate your call, Joss. Let's deconstruct some of the things you've said to see how this plays out. We start with the assumption that all vaccines are safe and effective. Last week, the top scientist with the World Health Organization so said exactly that, that they were all safe, that there are no adverse effects, that it's not the vaccine's fault if there's a problem. And then that's what she said to the world, to the media, at a press conference. But then at a UN hearing that was not covered by the media, but someone did record her, she said just the opposite, that we don't know the outcome, we need different science. And then, as I just played you a 9-minute clip the other day, the World Health Organization once a year brings all the top vaccinologists together and they talk about vaccines. Every single person had questions about vaccines that you would assume they would have already had the answer to. You don't start a mass vaccination program that is mandatory before you actually have the data to support its safety and efficacy. And that's exactly what they did. And they were raising these questions about, well, we don't know if it's safe, but in time we'll find out. Think of that statement, Josh. Wrap your mind around that. We don't know that 10 million children are going to be injured, and if so, to what degree, until 2 or 3 or 4 years in our post-marketing evaluation. No, that goes against the principle of cautionary use, meaning do not use anything if there's any suspicion or evidence it could be dangerous. They're doing just the opposite. Now, it's one thing to have voluntary vaccination. That's fine. That's a person's right. It's another thing to make it mandatory, because now you're doing more than giving a person an option. You're giving them no option. And only because you feel that if they are not vaccinated, it will endanger your child who is, or you who are vaccinated. Well, doesn't that go against the very principle that a vaccine is supposed to be protective? If 96% of the public are vaccinated, then they should be protected. That's the whole point of creating the antibodies. But then I played you a tape on the show earlier in the week of the world's leading authority on vaccine under oath in a deposition. Not before a camera, not before a press conference, not before a friendly media person interviewing, where he can give his opinion, and then we're supposed to juxtapose his opinion with fact, where he said that the production of antibodies in and of itself does not prove a person is immune. We've been saying that for years, because that's what the actual scientific literature shows. And unlike these other people, I only use scientifically supported peer-reviewed literature. That's why I keep saying, with the 54 articles we have written on vaccines in the last couple of years, the latest just a week ago, you could use these in a court of law. In fact, I actually have a lawyer that we've hired that all this lawyer does is review our articles and documentaries and other statements to see if this was to be used in a court of law, would this support every contention in here? That's the scholarship level we engage in. Now, in Japan, where they do not have mandatory vaccines for the first 2 years of life, they have virtually eliminated sudden infant death syndrome as a statistically significant part. Here, we're the number one country in the world with children dying at up to year one, and yet nobody wants to look at vaccines. We have more childhood illnesses than any other time in American history: asthma, inner ear infections, immune deficiencies, and brain abnormalities from delayed speech and inability to converse during certain periods when they're supposed to. And yet we refuse to look at the 5,000-pound gorilla in the room. Now, if vaccine makers really believe that their vaccines were safe and effective, then remove the 1986 indemnification that allowed them to create vaccines, no matter how toxic or how many people they injured, without any legal consequence. They won't do it. It's just a profit for them. Now, we've shown you this. We've shown every vaccine and the lack of science. For example, the flu vaccine. We showed you that for decades, the CDC has been allowing two diseases, pneumonia and influenza, completely different diseases, to be joined together. Because when we looked at just influenza, determined by test to be influenza, it was anywhere on low end from 600 to about 1,200 people a year dying from it. But when you add pneumonia, you're up to 36,000. So everybody, 36,000 deaths this year, 36,000 deaths this year. Nobody challenged it. We did. We were the first to challenge it using their own statistics. They were lying about it. Because if you said 600 people out of a country of 330 million people died of the flu, that's not statistically significant. But if you say 36,000, now people are afraid. Then you look at how many people died from, for example, measles in a 14-year period. It was zero. And from the vaccine, it was 104. So the more you look at the science, the more it tells you what the position should be on advocacy. It's one thing to advocate without your facts. That's dangerous. It's another thing to advocate because of your facts. Therein, Josh, I would share your concern, and I'm glad you have that concern, but I would share a difference that a person must know their rights and advocate for their rights. Otherwise, you have no rights except what the government gives you. And what do we call a government that gives us our rights instead of we having those rights? They are no longer inalienable. They are no longer certain. And now you're attacked. The New York Times, the Washington Post attack people who question the safety of vaccines. And all the people questioning had damage to their children in death from the vaccines to their children. And yet 2 million American mothers are not to be trusted. They're liars. They're deceivers. They're manipulators. They're unsophisticated. Why? Because you can't trust someone who says that their children were vaccinated and got sick. That's nonsense. Does the New York Times agree with that? No. Does CDC? No. Does the World Health Organization? No. So whose side are you on, Josh? I'm on the side of the mother and science. And therefore, I believe we should advocate. I believe we should have a general strike. I'd like to see this whole goddamn country shut down, except for emergency services, to show we mean it. Our government does not have the power and should never have been given the power by the sociopaths in power to tell us what we should do with our lives, our bodies. Maybe you and I on that point differ. I don't want the government to tell me what I should think and what I'm allowed to think. I don't want the government to tell me that I can't use my speech, even if it offends someone. I don't want to be the person who says, you can't talk about vaccines or genetically engineered. You can't talk about the poor. You can't talk about de-ghettoizing America. How dare you, Gary, talk about veterans who are sick? You have no right. You're yelling fire in a theater. You should be put in prison and shot. Gee, has that ever happened, Josh? Yeah. Communist China, communist Russia, Stalin's Russia, Hitler's, Mussolini's, Pol Pot's, Pinochet's. Want me to go through the list? I can give you 60 countries. So before you question, should we have the right to shout fire in a theater, better ask who's determining that it's fire and who's determining that I should be censored in my right to speak out. Just a thought for you. I appreciate your call, Josh. Thank you. Darren from New York, your thoughts, please.
Hi. Gary, great show as usual. Several things. Piggybacking on the vaccine thing, 100% correct. And also to encourage people that sometimes before they get the scholarship and all the research, to trust their instincts in how the information is being revealed. Came to the same conclusions, this is years back, watching how they were saying, vaccines, everyone has to be vaccinated, or this is going to happen, and, quoting statistics about, percentages increase. Then when you look at the numbers, the sample size, you're like, wait a minute, that's not really that much of an increase. And then that's how you start realizing something is wrong and you do more research. But aside from that, on the education issue, spot on, definitely on that, that how if you go against the grain, you are demonized. I've worked for NYC's public city schools back when Bloomberg was in power. And that was when the Common Core was just coming about. And not that anything, it's just knowledge. It's pushing down 2 years above a grade level into, you know, to a student's grade, like a sixth grader starts learning eighth grade at work, which is problematic in itself. But besides that, anyone who spoke out against it, all of a sudden you found yourself demonized. You know, you were scrutinized more in your classroom and everything. And some teachers did get fired because he basically went on a kind of rampage to get rid of tenured teachers. Also, back on the other issue, you said, how do we get to this point? I do believe also it's a lack of it's like apathy in the sense that we are told that we are creatures of reason, but yet in large societies we operate like a herd mentality. And basically, you know, if you don't go with the group over, then you have to be wrong because the large group means survival. And, you know, we stopped analyzing that as the individual efforts that led to, oh, that's good, so now let everybody try and do that because that's the right way. But I'll let someone else talk. I'll hang up, but thanks for letting me speak.
I appreciate it. Joe Thomas just emailed me and said, I didn't hear all the answer you gave Josh, but you should have said that if your kid is vaccinated, why are you afraid of the unvaccinated kid? I actually use that in my answer, and I'll just reframe it. It is a complete myth, the herd vaccine. This is one of those institutional lies that we've heard for decades. We've written articles on the herd immunity theory. We've seen countries in the world like China where they're very strict about vaccines. You cannot out there. And yet they have herd immunity completely statistically and yet come down with the very same illnesses and people who've been fully vaccinated there and in the United States. We gave examples of the whooping cough and measles, excuse me, and chicken pox, where people who were fully vaccinated came down with it. Well, if they were fully vaccinated, how did they come down with it? Not just a few people all over the country. That's why you have to look deeper into the topic. I've spent over 15,000 hours studying the subject, as have the others in the field, like Tony Bark and Suzanne Humphreys. And when you get to that level of research, you're thinking, my God, they've never even done a double-blind placebo-controlled study. They'll say they have. They lie. They're comparing one vaccine to another. That's like comparing one chemotherapy agent to another and say there was a 66% increase in survival. Yeah, you lived 3 months and 2 days and versus 3 months and 14 days. You're still dying in the same period of time. You still have all the side effects. Now do that against no placebo. See, compare a person with chemotherapy or not. They won't do that. Compare a vaccinated with a saline solution. They won't do that. They could have a long time ago. They know the outcome. When you know the outcome and it's going to be bad for you, it's like hiding all of the negative studies that you don't have to show before a FDA advisory committee. And so 90 studies were bad, no results, and the one study with a slight statistical significance, that's the one that they judge it upon, and that's how corrupt science has been. And 67% of all scientific studies are not reproducible. Not reproducible. So if two-thirds of all scientific studies cannot be reproduced, that means the underlying original studies were fraudulent or flawed or failed, and vaccines are at the top of that list. So that's why we have to question everything and question it before we make our decisions. You shouldn't keep a kid out of school when you tell him there's no aborted fetal cells in the vaccine, as the head of the New Jersey Senate said recently, and yet we had the top vaccine expert in the world state, yes, all these vaccines have these aborted cells in them. Well, if a person's religion prevents them from using a vaccine with animal or human cells in it, shouldn't we also have a system that honors that? Right now, in the state of California, 161 medical doctors who've allowed medical exemptions are now being challenged that they should have their licenses revoked. That's a police state. And who's doing that? The same person who's been leading the impeachment process. Now, whether they impeach Trump or not, that's not my focus. I don't like Trump. But what I don't like even more is I don't like fascism in medicine, in healthcare, in education. Institutions are never meant to make us feel good and be comfortable and satisfying. They're meant to challenge us, to prepare us for the real world that is even more challenging when we're no longer in the comfort and security and the bounded area of our family's protection. You go into the real world, they have standards. If you have not been taught what those standards are, if all you've done is teach to the test, and Common Core was a disaster. Anyone who's in education, I've been a teacher for over 45 years, I could tell you every time you look at it, you think, how in the world did they pass it? It was the politics, and nobody could talk against it. So we had better be looking at everything in our lives and asking, have we been told the truth? And if so, how do I know? That's where we go to that concept that I created called intentional neglect. The opposite of intentional neglect is intentional awareness, intentionally educated on a topic. I want to know about what caused the wildfires, the bushfires in Australia, that they were completely unprepared for. I want to know why were they unprepared. I want to know why they didn't have sanctuaries already set up for all the wallaby and all of the other creatures that they had there, over a billion that were killed. That tells me an awful lot about the gross incompetence, the hubris and neglect of an entire nation, the nation just about the same size as America. Are we any better prepared for a disaster? The answer is no. We only come in after the effect. And then they go over to a Red Cross station, pick up a sandwich and a cup of coffee as if, you know, glad we have this. But you didn't have to have this disaster at all in most cases if you prepared for it. But we're unprepared for everything in life, including how to be critical thinkers and how to exercise our freedom of choice. Why don't you do this? Why don't you go 1 week in your life where you do not exercise freedom of choice at all? Instead, you live by consensus. Try that for 1 week. Josh, you listen to me? 1 week. Eat what the average person, the average doctor, the doctor's diet, you know, eat the common American diet. Watch as much television, watch as much internet. Talk at the level of articulation as the average person. It's consensus. Be a good citizen. Be what Noam Chomsky said earlier in today's program. Conform for a week. Then maybe you'll fully appreciate what it means to seek a different path, a different truth. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day. One night in heaven.